Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Tony and Joel and special guest Joanne because they were talking about Game of Thrones and Spider-Man Homecoming. Game of Thrones is in its seventh season. We've seen the first three episodes. You've probably seen more by the time the podcast goes up, but we're just going to stick to the first three right now. So everybody, how do we feel about the new season of Game of Thrones?
I'm addicted, so I think it's nice. And I've been watching it, but I'm a little disappointed, but I'm not so disappointed that I'm not going to watch it because I'm addicted.
I want to interject really quick. Spoiler alert in case anyone...
We're
definitely going to be doing major spoilers for all three of these episodes.
Thank
just
you,
because
Doug.
There's no good way to talk about them, I think.
The other ones were always so dramatic. Like even when something dramatic happens at the end, the music is just so interesting that... And this one is sort of like, you know all the stuff that's going on, the characters and all that, but you don't see any of that kind of dazzle. And it seems kind of slow moving. And also there are things in it that I don't like. Like it's kind of plotting. And I don't understand why there are scenes that go on and on. Like Samwell is... You're seeing the routine of his day. And it seems like it's 5 minutes of watching him do slopping the...
That second episode sequence.
And I'm like, I get it. He's a novice in a monastery, so he has to do this stuff. But that went on and on and on, and I kind of didn't understand that.
There was a bit of a comedic element to that, I thought.
I think so.
A little bit, yeah. But it just seems, I get it, and you can stop that now. And then there's some scenes like with Arya. I don't get it. Well, number one, I didn't understand that that guy was famous. When she goes into the woods and meets that group of troubadours, and one guy is singing, and apparently it's a cameo of someone I don't even know who he is. But I was like, why is that scene there? To me, in the earlier shows, every scene had a reason for existing and being there. And I didn't get those guys weren't like an attacker or come up later in the show that I know of. You know, they didn't discuss anything really. Nothing was revealed about her character. It was just odd. And then there was another one, I think, in the last one where she had a scene. And it was the same thing. I was like, why is this scene happening? I'm not learning anything. There's no hints are being dropped. It's just this scene. And I'm like, man, that's like an editor's job to get this out of here.
The way you describe that is how I felt about, I think it was season four or season three, where it was just scene after scene of people talking but not doing anything. Or nothing gets decided. Nothing gets revealed. It's just kind of just dialogue for the sake of dialogue, I felt. And so that's kind of emboldening for me to hear someone else have that same opinion, even though it's about different episodes.
Well, I don't mind dialogue, not action, but dialogue that develops the character. You learn something about the character. This was just dialogue, and you don't get anything. There's nothing coming out of it. It's just a really mundane conversation.
And to be fair, I actually had the same thing written on my sheet that, you know, they don't really... We're not spared the long and the epic scenes, but I also thought some of it was really good. I mean, some of it is that they're just sticking to their guns with their long, drawn-out sequences. Like, there's one where you're just looking at a field of snow, a storm's coming, and, like, they take, seriously, like, 2.5-3 minutes for this marching army to come and come right past the camera, and the storm is just billowing around them. And it's a pretty dramatic scene. We've seen the army before. We didn't see them, you know, with giants before. We didn't see them in this context or in this, like, different canvas, because now we know they're there. They're like reckoning right at the door.
I agree. Because the first time I saw them, I was like, wow, this, I mean, I didn't read the book, so I don't know to kind of expect it. And those Army of the Dead was coming, and I'd never seen them before, and I was ahead. I'm like, is that horse like half dead, half alive? You know, it was it was freaky, and it was a reason, you know, it brought you into the story, and it really shocked you, and you got something out of it. This time, it's just like, okay, these bad guys are coming. We know about that
already.
We've
seen them, But it was a really incredible shot, nonetheless. It's kind of like they have to set it up again. They have to remind us that.
Exactly. Hey, I think they have to catch everybody up to... To collect other, you know, just in case there's other people that, you know, haven't seen.
You know what I don't remember in the other seasons is, like, this one they had before each of the three shows, they were showing you, like, catching you up, showing some scenes from the past and some upcoming scenes to kind of, and I don't remember that happening with the other seasons. Were they doing that, too?
They were doing that sometimes.
Sometimes?
Yeah.
Because this one they did all three, I think, and I was like, maybe because there's seven seasons now.
Yeah,
people got and there's so much.
To keep track of exactly.
I think I've been enjoying it more than you have, though. I've really been into the Lannisters Cersei and Jaime. Mm-hmm. They kind of fell off for me the past couple seasons. I didn't really care.
Yeah.
You know, Jaime's struggling with what he does without his hand, and he kind of just moped around for two seasons or something like that. And I didn't really care, but now he's kind of, you know, found his purpose again in defending his sister, planning the battles, going to war. Like, he's kind of found himself again, and I like that a lot. And Cersei, it's like the veil has finally been pulled back on how cruel she is. Like, we always knew that she was bad, but not this bad.
Yeah.
She certainly wasn't in the first couple. She was just kind of resentful in the beginning of the series, but now she's full-on spiteful and violently
got power.
So. Yes.
Yeah, she can be.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I started to prep myself for this by watching some of the first season. And it was kind of interesting, the first season where the Starks are kind of, it was Starks are the good guys. And, you know, they're the good family and stuff. But I started watching Ned Stark, and I just started getting annoyed with him. You know, he's a little bit too pompous, a little bit too black and white, you know. And I guess now I start seeing it in Jon Snow. You know, I'm like, oh, he's picked up some of this, like, let's be, you know, kind to the family that didn't fight with them, you know, and don't take away their castles. Yeah. And what really kind of interests me is, like, this is the feminist stuff for me, you know. I'm like, Sansa's completely dissed by him, and I see that look on his face sometimes, like, wait a minute, you're talking out loud in this meeting, and you're not saying things that are, like, backing me up, you know. And it's like, how dare you? You could just see it on his face. They're like, whoa, what's going on, you know. And he says he's on her side, but not, like, so she's actually my character now.
Sansa?
I'm watching Sansa, I think. I want to see her. I want to see what she does with Littlefinger, whether she's up to his game completely and can kind of, that she knows what's going on and has some control. So she's my favorite character, like, in the last three. That's the one I want to see. It used to be, I used to want to see Tyrion on the screen.
So Tyrion, it's great to talk about him now, too, because he... Now that he is on the screen in this very extreme place of, like, he's the hand of Daenerys, you know, it's like now he's kind of has to rein himself in. He's obviously is unflagging in his loyalty, but it's so interesting seeing them all on screen, especially with Jon Snow when he knows that there's, like, there's no real sides to take other than, like, what logic and what his loyalty to the queen. But you can kind of, like, he's so cold in the way he's dishing out his counsel, his advice. It's so incredibly hard to read him versus earlier when he was just fun, like, and he's still funny, but you know, when he has to be so serious and he has to be so, like, cold and reserved, whereas he used to be, like, drunk and lively.
Well, now he's a politician. And that's his role. So he can't let his emotions and passion show. He's got to be playing the game.
He can't be the black sheep anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The reformed black sheep.
I think it's been moving pretty fast, too, the plot. I feel like they're just cranking it out, just like kingdoms fall in a day now, in an episode, in an hour. That was surprising to me, that what happened to the Dornish women and to Highgarden was just like episode two, episode three, and we still got five episodes left. Like, how much more can happen in this season? As opposed to some seasons, again, the season three, season four, just kind of, I felt dragged a lot. Nothing happened. There was a lot of talking. Now things are happening at the beginning of the episode, at the end of the episode. People are dying. Alliances are being forged. Alliances are being torn apart. I think it's fantastic. I think it's maybe the best the show has ever been.
When they described the big plan in the first episode, I was wondering, okay, how many episodes is it going to take for all of this to happen? And then by episode three, you're already seeing the fruition of it and the consequences of that plan being drawn up. It was just incredible.
Yeah, it is fast. I think also it's, I've also been rewatching the Star Trek, the original ones, recently. Only for this stupid reason, because I want to track the star dates. But I started realizing, you know, everybody always talks about, oh, Star Trek was only around for 3 years. Well, it was around for 3 years, and the first year had 29 episodes. So,
as opposed to, you know, 8 or 10.
Right. So when these episodes happen with Game of Thrones, they're just 10. So it's... That's not a lot.
No.
That's really not a lot for a fully developed storyline.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you got a point, especially now, maybe as they get towards the end, they got to cram in as much as they possibly can. And, you know, sometimes that's for they can't have like the war that Robb Stark waged on the Lannisters took like a season or two, right? Maybe a season and a half. Right. And now they just march on Highgarden and it's 10 minutes.
I don't think you even saw any fighting. And there's there were some scenes to me that were odd, like when that was over and Jaime is going to see the queen, Elena. You know, he's like walking in this long path to get to her office or her tower or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I was like, what's that about? I didn't kind of even get it. I go, oh, that must mean that the fighting's over. Mm-hmm. But you didn't even, I didn't see him fighting.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't, you know, the guy was just like clean. And, you know, I didn't see a fight scene that he came from fighting or even from. There was kind of this disconnect. Oh, yeah, this is over now. Oh, well, we didn't even see it happen for a few seconds.
I think it emphasized how in charge he is.
Yeah, as a general.
He doesn't have any. He doesn't do the fighting anymore, essentially.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is they didn't even have him in a council of generals. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They really condensed that part down.
Really?
But I think that, you know, by season seven, people have like, okay, this is, they filled in the blank enough with that. I thought that that scene with the queen was, I thought it was incredible because, you know, talking about packing a lot into a scene, you know, season two, somebody filling wine and giving someone else a glass, it's refreshment. By season seven, Jaime giving her a glass of wine, you're like,
uh-oh. That's right.
This, you know, I can see what's coming because, like, the meaning is packed in and all the history between all the characters, and you kind of saw the climax of the scene coming.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a terrific scene. I thought that was very active emotionally. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
Hmm. It was a great last scene.
Yeah, it was. For a beloved character from a beloved actress that a lot of people kind of pull out as one of their favorites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tony made mention, the last time we talked about Game of Thrones, we made some predictions.
Did you?
Yeah, we did. I don't remember them, but...
I re-listened to some of the last episode that we recorded on Game of Thrones, and basically you asked what we thought was going to happen on episode 9 of season 6.
Right.
My reaction to that was, I know that now that Cersei and Jaime are back together, that they're capable of terrible things. And, like, they did terrible things in that episode.
Yes.
But also that end of the season. And I'm pretty sure your prediction was that Daenerys is actually going to, like, burn the Eastern Kingdoms. Like, come back and just, like, take them by force.
Yeah.
Which,
didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
Not quite. Could have happened. It
could have happened, But do you have any predictions for where the story's going to go? What do you think? What's going to happen? Who's going to die?
I don't have any predictions, but I do. I just do see, like, I'm not interested in Jaime anymore. He's too, you know, I was hoping that some of the good would come out in him, but he's sticking by the witch, his girlfriend, and I don't like her at all. And there was glimmers of the good guy there. And I'm like, don't you see? She's just.
What happens if Brienne and Jaime have to fight? Who would you...
I'm for Brienne.
Yeah.
She's going to have her Hulk boyfriend. What's that guy that's lurking around her, like trying to...
The hound? No, the red-headed wildling
One of the wildlings is interested in her. They'll
Not
make
Barrett
a good team.
Dondarrion, but the guy with the man bun or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Same.
So, I was just thinking we haven't seen her at all this season, so
that's true.
Probably due for a Brienne scene.
Brienne, yeah. Well, they had one scene where the guy's checking her out and one scene where she was talking to Sansa. A little bit about Littlefinger and stuff like that. So she's in there. So those are the ones I'm watching. I'm watching Sansa and watching Brienne, and I'm kind of tired of Jon Snow, and he's like getting to be a little bit like Ned Stark.
He's kind of, like getting to be like Ned. He knows that that's bad.
But he does it anyway.
He feels like he's kind of bound by fate.
Yeah.
He's like, I got to do the right thing, but it, you know, might get me killed.
Yep.
Right.
So far, I just loved his resolve, like kind of defying everybody's expectations, maybe of like him just bending the knee or him, you know, playing nice to get what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I like that defiance. I just thought that was like that was the North, you know. I just thought that was so cool. Like
it's part of the identity.
Of that. Yeah.
I like that. I just don't like the fact that, you know, when his sister says maybe you should give rewards to the people who did fight on your side here and give them these castles, he's just not listening to her. And I think that maybe she might have good advice. He never listens to her until after the fact. And he goes, oh, yeah, I would listen to but you were not going to.
Yeah.
And I think she could give him pretty good counsel.
Yeah, she's really, that was the point of like that one scene in the last episode where she's walking around and, mm-hmm. you know, just making all the right decisions and yeah. pointing out all yeah. the right things and that, oh, she's perfectly capable.
Yeah.
I'm also curious on what you guys think is going to happen to either Theon Greyjoy or the Red Woman, because I feel like Theon still
Poor Theon.
Has a chance to redeem himself. Sorry for him. But yeah, I feel, yeah. yeah. Those are just like those unwrapped up stories that it's impossible to predict, you know.
There's so many times when you think he's going to do something or he won't do something and he does the exact opposite of what you think. It's just
Who, Theon?
Yeah. It's
Yeah.
It's really, I wouldn't say painful, but it's really just rending to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, poor schmuck.
But the interaction between Varys, seeing Varys kind of like unsheath his claws a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the Red mm-hmm. Woman, yeah. Yeah. about Melisandre, yeah. just seeing them, that they still got it.
Yeah.
Even though their circumstances have changed, they're not. They're just kind of laying low for the time being.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that aspect, and I really hope that that does come to, builds on something.
I think in a way they're like the master players, you know, the master game players, because mm-hmm. they're really playing the long game.
Survivors.
Yeah. Yeah. The yeah. survivors, they're the... It, reminds me, they used to have the conversations between Varys and Littlefinger,
mm-hmm.
like in the Red Keep, in the throne room. Like, I miss those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Melisandre kind of stepped into that, and mm-hmm. like it was the same scene with a new character. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it might be interesting to see what Littlefinger gets up to. I mean, right now all he does is like lurk in the background and watch Sansa and smile once in a while when he thinks she's doing something right. You know, but I'm like, are you just approving what she's doing, or are you plotting somewhere back there?
I'm afraid that he's plotting.
Yeah, but, yeah. he's going to turn. If the war turns, he's going to turn and back Daenerys or back the Lannisters or whatever he has to do, he's mm-hmm. going to do.
Well, he wants to be
yeah. king.
He wants to oh, yeah. be the yeah, lord the of the world.
The scariest thing for me is that it doesn't make any sense to us as the viewers, but like the scariest thing would be is if he betrays Sansa, because, you know, like the trust we think that he loves Sansa because he loved Sansa, you know. Catelyn Stark. That's what really scares me. It's like, are we going to be completely shocked when something happens like that?
I don't think Sansa's going to be surprised if he does something.
That's true.
I think she's ready for him.
She's been trained. Yeah.
Also, they're talking about the dragons having that chink in the mm-hmm. armor, so to speak. I think that maybe Euron might be that chink for Cersei somehow. I don't think it seemed her decision. In regards to Euron, I think was a little bit hasty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she may have obviously have thought about it, but it seems to me that that's going to come back right. and reap a whirlwind for her.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she thinks she knows everything,
yeah,
and she's playing with fire with him. You know, yeah. he's not a predictable cannon, quality
exactly.
at all.
Yeah. All right, so that's Game of Thrones. Season 7, the first 3 episodes. We hope you've enjoyed our conversation. We hope you've enjoyed Joanne, our guest on all things Game of Thrones.
I had fun, thank you.
Maybe we'll do one more after the whole thing wraps up.
I'd love to.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right, next we're going to talk about the new movie Spider-Man Homecoming. It's in theaters now, so it's not available on the shelf at Des Plaines, but it soon will be, we hope. Spider-Man Homecoming is, what, the 7th Spider-Man and the 3rd reboot? I don't know, something like that. But what do you guys think of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Really good, really fun, succeeded in what it tried to be, but it was totally unique at the same... It, like, built off of other styles of movies. It, like, wasn't only... I mean, sure, it was a superhero movie, but it wasn't, like, one thing or the other, and it wasn't mm-hmm. just for kids. It wasn't just a high school movie. It was mm-hmm. a lot of things, and it was funny, and it was fun. So, yeah, it gets my recommendation. I liked it a lot.
I agree. I like the teenager aspect. Mm-hmm. It really came through very well with this movie. Some scenes, what would a teenager do for this amount of time? And it's mm-hmm. exactly, if he had these spider powers, and it's yeah. exactly what he would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that too.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. I think it's my favorite Spider-Man movie, at least. Mm-hmm. Better than any Tobey Maguire or any Andrew Garfield. And probably in the top third of my favorite Marvel films, something like that, you know, maybe top 5. I had a great time watching it. I thought the performances were great. I thought they made a lot of good decisions. There was no origin story whatsoever because everyone knows it. Yeah. Radioactive spider, we all know. Like, we've seen it twice in the movies and in the beginning of the cartoon, and we don't need that. So they went right into, he's Spider-Man. He's already got a suit. He's running around Queens, and he's running around Manhattan doing what he's got to do.
He's already a celebrity in some way, mm-hmm. you know?
And he's trying to juggle his like social life of building like Legos with his friends and trying to keep his identity secret. I love how his personality is defined though by like how much of a kid he is still, like how high school is still a thing that he needs to do. And I just thought he like played off the other characters on the screen so well. And I think that might be the reason that they wrote this the way they did. Like, I think that the reason that they gave him the suit that talks to him is just so that he can
have someone to
talk
converse
to.
Converse with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is, I mean, is great. It kept it everything interesting. So on that note, maybe the one downside of that was that there was a lot of like, I really didn't know what to expect. It was really jarring when he had the suit and was like, oh, I'm going to go solve crime. And his suit starts doing weird things. It was a cool subplot, but it was like one of the only jarring, weird like moments of the film. I really liked the villain of this film.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, and it's Michael Keaton, which is, he just did an amazing job. But I think he was like a really relatable antagonist, right? I mean, like, he's just like the working man's antagonist. He's just a guy that needs to keep his family safe and fed. And
his reason of being a villain is the blue collar villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where Spider-Man's the working man's hero, right? Like, he's just a kid. He's in a two-bedroom, you know, barely an apartment with his aunt and doing the best he can. And, you know, so is Tombs. So is the Vulture.
Yeah, so that was awesome. I mean, so I don't know. Even, like, one of the things I think this film was sort of also trying to do is, like, the coming of age type of, because he's learning being a superhero, but what does that mean? Like, it's not just jumping around and using your powers and being cool.
Yeah, he's translating his superhero powers into, you know, how do I be a great person, you know, and how do I make right decisions in regards to people I really care about? And I thought that was really great, the emphasis on that, too.
Yeah. Now that we're talking about it again, it's been a few weeks since I've seen it, but now that we're talking about it again, like, getting the sense of how great the film was, I mean, like, the fact that they had, like, the academic decathlon kind of thing, like, right in the middle of it, that was, it adds to that, like, high school drama, and there was those decisions that you're talking about where he's like, oh, but there's this girl I have a crush on, but there's also this crime I need to solve, you know?
Right.
Yeah, also, he makes that decision, and it's always the hero decision throughout the movie, even though you think, like, maybe he's not, maybe he's going to give it up and be more of a kid, but, like, you know, at the very end, he still makes the decision, and he runs off to fight the Vulture because he's just, that's who he is. He's Spider-Man. Like, he's trying to balance that with being Peter Parker, but, you know, when push comes to shove, he knows which way that balance is going to go, which I thought was, it's kind of a strange hero now because we don't have a lot of hidden identity heroes anymore. We kind of did, but now it's Iron Man is Iron Man and everyone knows it. Thor is Thor and everyone knows
it. And you have Captain America making the videos
for educational videos.
Who better? Yeah, you're right. It's that kind of aspect of, and there was a sense when I was watching it, it's the same thing with Clark Kent and Superman. You can't tell me that no one notices that just the glasses are that much different. And, you know, every time they talk about, where were you, Peter? Oh, and this guy showed up and dressed up as a spider. But if you're willing to suspend your disbelief to watch the movie, you're willing to suspend the belief of people not believing, not putting that together.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I feel like finally, Spider-Man was a really funny movie and a really funny character. Like, that's what you've kind of been missing. He's always been about being funny. It's, you know, in the original comics is about being funny. It's the Tobey Maguire nerd thing was kind of an invention compared to, you know, the old Spider-Man would just lay into Flash. Like, you know, he didn't get picked on because he was a nerd. He got picked on because he was a loudmouth in high school. So it was good to see kind of a return to that, where a character who makes jokes, you know, razzes on the bad guys, he whatever, he's into it. And that's just his character. That's just his personality. And I don't think that the movies really captured that. And I thought this one brought it back.
Yeah, from the exact moment when he encounters the people trying to knock over the ATM in that bank, and he's, before they even know he's there, he's trying to, like, pose himself. And he's, like, micro-posing himself just to to get the right. That was such a telling moment of his character.
Yeah.
Like, this is my big moment. I know it's coming, and I got to look great for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think Tom Holland as Peter Parker as Spider-Man is fantastic. The movie is basically just him bouncing off someone else. It's like him talking to Jon Favreau, him talking to Robert Downey Jr., him talking to, oh, I don't know the name of the actor who plays Ned. Mm-hmm. But that was quite a casting, the guy who played Ned, because that was very well played. Yeah. I think the acting is phenomenal. I think the script is funny, which is great. And even though it was one of those kind of scary, there were 7-8 different writers on the script, you know, whenever those movies come out, I'm always hesitant. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great. John Watts is the director. He's barely done anything I recognized. He did a horror movie called Clown, and he did a Cop Car with Kevin Bacon. If you remember that one, I forgot about it, but really shined on this movie. Like, it kind of, this movie had everything to lose, I feel.
Sure.
You know, it was a Frankenstein of a script and an untested director and a brand new protagonist, a brand new lead actor. And they put it all together and they did a great job. I love this Spider-Man. I love this character. I can't wait to see, I loved him in Civil War. I can't wait to see him again in Infinity War. I don't know how many more good things I can say about this movie. Right. The reimagining of the Vulture was great. As someone who preyed upon the corpses of aliens, like literally picking their bodies clean for the alien technology, while still being, I mean, that's what Vulture was he was an inventor. He was a mechanical engineer. So incorporating all the new Avengers stuff of, you know, the Chitauri technology left behind and, you know, how do we use this to make money? And yeah, he embraced life as a Vulture. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think Michael Keaton's acting too, just like reinforced it. Like they just did a great job, like in his costuming, even the design of that is basically his Vulture wings. I mean, like he just like seemed like he knew what was up and like, you know, even if his squad was independent and they were kind of ruffians, like, he was like a boss man. It was all about the money. It was all about the game that he was playing, you know. And I thought that was really compelling. Never did I doubt that this guy could do what he set his mind to do.
Yeah. Right, and it wasn't to rule the world. Right. It was to protect his own corner of the world.
Yeah.
And well done, too. And he was a great character and creepy.
Yeah.
And the right spots.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Donald Glover was in it. I thought that was adorable. That was a fun surprise because there was the internet campaign to make Donald Glover Spider-Man in the next movie, and they did not choose him. They went another direction, but they put him in the movie anyway. You know, his name wasn't on the poster. He wasn't in any of the trailers, so it was a good, honest surprise when I went to the movie. I'm like, I know him. The new MJ is interesting. Is that a spoiler? I guess so, but
it was also just almost a cameo, right?
Yeah. But I like it. The casting in this movie, again, Hannibal Buress as the gym teacher was fantastic. Just someone who barely cared, didn't want to be there, just, you know, sitting in detention, playing the videos for the kids, and then go do laps. Like, the casting on this movie is maybe its best feature. And then Michael Keaton is a close second. But, you know, that goes back to casting, too. So, you know, they get points for that as well. All right. So that's going to do it for our discussion of Spider-Man Homecoming and Game of Thrones Season 7. If you're looking to check out Game of Thrones, we don't have Season 7, of course, because it's new. But we've got all the other seasons at the Desplaines Library on DVD and Blu-ray. We've also got Spider-Man movies. We've got the Tobey Maguires. We've got the Andrew Garfields. We've got all the new MCU Marvel movies with Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau and Captain America being his inspirational self. So that's going to do it for the Pint and Click podcast. We'll see you next time.